I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Welcome to Scam Wow.
I'm Caitlin Brodney.
And I'm Alan Arthur.
And we love scams.
We love scams.
Oh, guys, we love scams. We love you. We love a husband in the mic.
Yes.
On the mic.
I'm
in
here.
The studio.
Yeah. In our bedroom.
In our This is where the magic happens and where everything happens.
Yeah, like on Cribs.
Yeah, except all those people had real jobs.
And real houses. They weren't like, here's our queen's apartment. Except for Redman. That was the best one.
I don't remember
when he takes him to his house in like Staten Island or something.
I don't remember it.
And it's
hilarious. One of the houses was like, they had a bunch of people with cardboard and like laying on the floor.
It could have been his.
I don't know. I don't want to.
He had like a guy asleep there.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
That was my favorite.
Oh, it was great.
It was just real.
Broken screen door, all kinds.
Yes,
oh, it's the best.
Like,
it's legendary.
It's amazing. All right, we got a link to that.
Just find it on YouTube. It's unbelievable.
It's
Redman, okay. Legendary rapper, legendary Cribs guest.
Great. The scam. So, also side note, we were supposed to record earlier today, but our next door neighbor, who's a 96-year-old Italian woman, invited me into her home and gave me cake and coffee, and I couldn't leave. You can't leave.
No.
You can't dine and dash on a 96-year-old.
Yes, you have to pay her with your time.
With her time, and I have to hear
hugs,
her story. Oh, we
listening.
Hugged so much. If either of us are sick, now we're both sick with
okay.
something. But she already survived COVID, and I haven't.
She had COVID.
Yeah,
she crushed it.
She crushed it. She's a hero. Also, the bishop was on the TV talking all about, you know, God. So maybe we need to put Bishop on our TV. I'll ask
or
her
what
channel it is, just for some luck. Just for some COVID luck.
Some good luck.
We don't know. Vaccines are coming out every day. It could be also Bishop. And then I gave her a basil plant, and she was so excited because we had a bunch of basil plants in the front. So I gave her a basil plant.
A basil plant to an old Italian lady. It's
oh,
like a bouquet
it's
of
gold.
Roses.
Yeah. Yes. I also gave a basil plant to the guy next door. Anyway, if you give it, let's go back to, if you give a lady, an old lady in Italian, she told me it's how you make, the basil plant is how you make the sauce.
oh, you got to make the sauce.
And I said, I can make you sauce. She's like, no, I'm making your sauce.
You will not make this lady a sauce.
Well, no, I am real. The one thing I'm good at is Italian.
I know, but it's like.
Exactly. It was offensive.
Yeah.
I definitely offended her. She was like, no, I make a de sauce. Yeah. And I was like, okay.
It's like, I'll breastfeed your child.
I breastfeed. No matter how old I am, I will be breastfeeding. Also, there was an Italian coffee maker. And I was like, oh, is this how you use it? She goes, I asked her if she like, I thought she boiled water to put in ground coffee because there was a kettle that was like an electric kettle, it looked like. But apparently it was like this old coffee maker. And I was like, oh, do you need grounds? She goes, no, I make the real coffee. She goes, you put it in there. And so somehow, don't know what that means. So making the real coffee, I don't know what that means. If you're an advertiser selling real coffee, I'll buy it also.
Make it a real brand coffee.
Make it a real coffee and give me the money. And no offense to any Italians out there, that's actually how she speaks. I'm not trying to do an impression. I'm doing a genuine impression, not a...
No, you're not caricaturing.
No, she talked like that.
Yes.
It was so cute. Oh, she's so great. So we had lots of hugs. And then I was like, we've got to get back to talk about some scams on a podcast. I didn't explain any of that to her because it would have...
No, she will not know what a podcast is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, let's get to... Wow, I've said let's get to the scam like 6 times, but you're just so charming and your face is so pretty. I can't. Alan Arthur is my incredible journalist husband who does all of the homework he's supposed to do.
I try. I like researching.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like...
No, you don't want to...
digging in public records, deeply, but I like to bring stuff to the table.
He likes to get to the table. Also, last night, you were showing me something about Erica Girardi getting sued, so...
Yes, Erica Jane.
She
showed up at...
You said it
at
so
the
well.
Airport. Coming back from Hawaii, and a woman served her giant stacks of legal papers
with a
$50 million lawsuit. Yeah, and Page Six from the New York Post was on hand to capture live shots of her getting served with this new $50 million lawsuit for racketeering.
Yeah, they're going to keep, they should actually. Like, she kind of got off of it in a weird way, but they should keep going. I don't think they should ever let up on her.
So as of right now when we're recording this, this is breaking news.
This is breaking news, and we don't even know when this is going to come out.
No, this could be old news by then.
That's what happens with housewives.
Looked not excited to be served with a $50 million lawsuit.
Grumpy like she always does.
And to have her picture taken. I don't envy that.
Okay, let's get to our scam.
Mm-hmm.
Our scam of the week. What is it?
Yeah, it is about a man named Ed Mullins.
Who's that?
Ed Mullins was the president of the Sergeants Benevolent Association.
What the hell is that? Sounds like a bunch of assholes who don't shut up.
Well, it's a police union.
Okay. Benevolent is like a real ridiculous person, right?
Belligerent
is what I'm thinking.
Yes. Well, they're that too.
Yeah.
They're
belligerent, benevolent.
That is part of the story, I think, that they are very belligerent. Ugh. He in particular is incredibly belligerent.
You gotta be when you're the president.
But allegedly, he's also a scammer.
Great.
So he's
one of us.
Yeah, so the Sergeants Benevolent Association, for those who don't know, is a police union for the NYPD.
Oh, okay.
And it's the fifth largest police union in the United States. I did not know that, but I learned that.
There's one even larger? Fun.
Yeah, there's four larger.
Great.
It has 13,000 current and retired sergeants are members of the union.
Okay.
And you pay $1,300 a year. If you're active.
Like SAG-AFTRA.
Yeah, your dues. You pay your dues to be a member. Mm-hmm. And then you pay, once you retire, you pay $600 once. And I think you're a member for the rest of your life.
I wish.
After you retire. Ugh. So all of that money, 90% of that money that gets brought in from dues goes into this fund. I think it's called the Contingent Fund.
Okay.
And the Contingent Fund basically pays for the costs of doing business for the union.
Okay.
So if you go out to dinner.
What if you need a sandwich or something?
Sure. Probably not every sandwich, but like if it's in the course like of doing business, like we're having a meeting. Exactly. Like we're having a meeting. We're going to go, the top brass is going to go out to dinner and we're going to talk about SBA business. Mm-hmm.
What about we need more Q-tips for the bathroom?
I don't know what, okay. Who pays for Q-tips?
But I'm like, is it what runs the business?
Rent? there's also, they get taxpayer money as well.
No.
Well, okay. A lot of unions do. A lot of public sector unions do. So not private sector. So if Amazon or whatever. Yeah. If SAG-AFTRA union, you know, they're a union.
Right.
They don't get taxpayer money.
Oh, right. But a garbage.
If you're a teacher's union or a police union, garbage man. That the idea is
it's
that.
It's a public service.
Exactly. Okay. So you would be funding with taxpayer money some of the pensions that they get or health benefits that they get, all
so,
that stuff.
So we're paying for, taxes pay for people's day to day, like the job. And then they also pay for when they're done with the job. And then they also pay for those fun little union things.
What are the fun little union?
Like this
things?
Extra union. It's just like it also goes.
Well, so
union.
This contingent fund is supposed to be just for like mainly for doing business.
Okay. Business parties.
Business.
All I can think of is like a group.
Sure. Like I mean, I guess. Well, yeah. I mean, Ed Mullins throws himself quite a party.
Okay,
here.
Tell me more.
So basically, the rule was that anything more than $50 mm-hmm. that you charge to this account,
okay.
either you use the SBA card or you ask to be reimbursed.
Okay.
Anything more than $50, you have to have a receipt.
Sure.
And you have to have an attendee list. So who was there?
So under 50, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Probably not whatever you want, but
I'm trying to find
once it hits $50,
you gotta
gets to be more.
Okay.
So, and then you also have to share what was discussed at the event.
Oh.
So if you go out to dinner, you have to say it was me and these other people. And here's what we were, it was an assistant to the mayor and somebody from the NYPD. And we were talking about
plastic surgery.
Sure. Usually it's, hopefully it's something business. We're going to start a plastic surgery fund for all the police. That's what they need.
Yeah.
So what would happen was the vice president of the board of the Sergeants Benevolent Association was the person who scrutinized all of the receipts.
Oh, okay. So somebody
for Ed Mullins, who was the president.
Okay.
In 2017, the vice president retired.
Okay.
And the treasurer took over because the president is at the top. So you need somebody ostensibly who's
checks and balances.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. To go over his receipts, who decides what's legal for the president to do. So the person who was supposed to be enforcing these rules about the guest list, all that stuff, suddenly, why are you talking to me during while I'm doing
your
it?
Your skin looks so good. You look so beautiful. And I'm sitting here. Maybe it's the heat. You're just beautiful. Okay, keep going. I just want everyone to hear how beautiful you are. Keep going. Keep going.
Well, they're not going to hear it because I just complained about it.
I know.
You interrupting
going.
Me.
I know. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so in 2017, the vice president retired.
Right.
The treasurer took over. And the treasurer took over looking at Ed Mullins' receipts for as the president. So from there is really where the Justice Department's indictment starts.
It's an indictment?
Yes.
Wow.
So in October of 2021, Ed Mullins' house on Long Island was raided by the FBI.
Whoa.
And in February 2022, he was indicted for one count of wire fraud that was around $1 million.
This is crazy. This is after 2020, where they have already had so much bad rep on them. There's so much shit the NYPD is doing that everyone's upset with them for. Mm-hmm. And he still has the audacity to keep going.
As a matter of fact, Ed Mullins became a bit notorious during the protests, particularly during 2020, of saying very incendiary things to about protesters. Let's see. Let me give you some of his greatest hits that I've brought with me today. Ed Mullins, and I feel that this is relevant.
It is.
I feel that this is relevant because police and these loudmouth police, who I do some, as a journalist, I report a lot on the prison system and the criminal legal system. Mm-hmm. And the police are, as many people might know, very active in assigning blame to people about whatever they might do and not really thinking through the societal issues that might exacerbate
their job
conditions.
Isn't to think through the societal issues. Their job is to find the issue, give the punishment, and carry that out. They're not trained to talk about how is this affected with society.
And police unions are really at the forefront of not just particularly in the last 15 or so years. I mean, they've always been resistant to change, but particularly in the last 1 to 2 decades have been really at the forefront of not just resistance to it, but hostility. And like, we're going to meet calls for even basic accountability with aggression. And Ed Mullins is one of the people who is a leader in that.
Okay.
So he was
very... He strongly believes he has no responsibility in that way.
No. Yeah. And now keep in mind, as you hear all this, that he's under indictment for stealing $1 million from the members of his own union. He was a big face on like conservative media. He would go on Fox News, go on Newsmax. He appeared on Fox News one time with a QAnon mug right behind him. That was a big thing. Yeah. He called City Councilman Richie Torres, who is gay, he called him a first-class whore on Twitter.
What?
He called a city health department leader a bitch with blood on her hands.
What?
The Sergeants Benevolent Association made a 4-minute YouTube video about blue racism, which is racism against police, which included a picture of... Who do you think they had a picture of?
George Floyd?
No. Who does every racist want to quote when they're trying to look Trump? Not racist?
A black person?
Yeah.
Martin Luther
King? Yes, of course. You have to have a Martin Luther King saying, we want to be judged by the content of our character, because that's what he was talking about. It was about being nice to police. And also the Sergeants Benevolent Association went on Twitter after Bill de Blasio's, which if for people not in New York City, Bill de Blasio is our former mayor, previous to the current one. His daughter was arrested during a protest in 2020, I believe. And the Sergeants Benevolent Association released her entire arrest report, complete with birthday, ID number. They basically doxed the mayor's daughter on Twitter.
Wow.
Shared her mugshot, all kinds of stuff.
God.
Yeah. And also, yeah, so he was in trouble for some of this. He lost some vacation days for this
That's
behavior.
It.
Yeah. He got departmental punishment and lost some vacation days. So that's just some of the things he's done. If you look him up, you'll see that he's said much more, but all of this stuff, he said that, what was another one that if you don't want, some schools don't want police in the school, and it's like they're asking for school shooters. Maybe it's time they got what they asked for.
Okay, I don't want to hear you.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
No.
And now here is how he got indicted for almost $1 million of ripping off his own union members. So once the treasurer, it's fucked up. He's a nightmare.
Yeah, it's just also like, so crazy. Okay, this is so dark, but like my grandmother told me this, and she was in World War II, and she was like, every 70 years, people forget and they recreate these like humanitarian, like awful mistakes, and they forget the warning signs and they forget the attitudes. And she goes, I've seen it before. She's like, well, because she was in World War I and World War II. So she's like, we saw World War I happen. We said never again. And then
she was not in World War I,
but no, she knew about it. Her family was. No, but her, like,
she probably had family though. Yeah.
And she said that, like, then her generation grew up and they were like, we're nothing like that. We're nothing like that. And then she's like, that was like sooner than things that are happening right now. But she said, and then World War II came and it's like, we're never going to do this again. Like, and then it just, people just forget and human nature takes over of like the greed and the stuff. And it drives me crazy because you have a man like this who is such a monster. And the fact that he could even grow to be a monster, that there's no checks and balances, that there's no historical significance of how people behaved in the past or any sort of personal responsibility that he just was able to fly through.
Yeah, but I would say that the grift of police officers is ongoing. I don't think we've had to forget. I don't know that it ever stopped.
No, I don't think it's ever stopped, but I think there have been reports. Like, I think there was, because I have to believe that there are some good people. And I know we have some listeners who are like, my father and my grandfather has been doing this. So I'm not.
Well, the police are nice people is a decoy argument, but no, that's for another day.
No. I'm not saying police officers are all great people.
I'm just saying that's. I don't care whether they're nice people, really.
No,
they may be.
No, but
I'm just thinking about their job.
Yes. But what I'm saying is, like, okay, so there's a issue that happens, or there's a historic issue where you see that people are treated really badly. And it in the 60s, like, they have visual, lots of images of the police treating people really horribly. And then at least there was, like, I don't know if it ever really changed, but there was some awareness that this is happening and this is a real issue. And then time continues and sort of like the highlighted pressure of that goes away and they can continue to behave how they want to behave. And I feel like right now it's highlighting again. Now, I know if I was a woman of color or a family of color, we would have been like, it's still happening.
Yeah.
I don't think that it went away, but I just mean the social response of it.
Yeah.
It was, and you look in your history books and they show like the 1960s protests and it's like, how can these police officers be holding guns when hippies are giving them flowers? And
you look back on that and you go, how did they let that happen?
Yes. Yeah. And then it like quietly goes until you get to a person like this who's saying a comment about that with children's schools. Mm-hmm. And it's the problem is that it hasn't gone away. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't been cured. And so it's so frustrating because I know that there are good people out there. And I know that like people had a social response to it in the 60s when it was very terrible. But then the institution never changed. It continued to grow in this way of like prisoner and gatekeeper and higher than and lower than. And so now we get to a point where somebody can say something like this on Twitter because our media has grown and there has been no checks and balances since we've seen certain things like when they were so horrible, when you saw horrible human treatment in the 60s. We just talked about it. We had a social moment. You have posters of it, but then there's nothing institutionally there's some things have changed, but not enough to make it to that the human nature, you have these like, they just feel like aggressive pit bulls, like being held back, and then they can just continue to grow over time.
Yeah, well,
it just really upsets me.
That is the increasing approach of police and the people who train them and the people who are the loudest voices in their favor is like, we are warriors, we are good, everybody else is evil, and they want to kill you, they want to maim you, and there's no, like, you are a warrior. You are here to bring a righteous whatever. I mean, it's some dark stuff a lot of them are trained.
Exactly. But also there's like this thing of like, even just the little stuff where they're with our son, like you have Legos and we're watching a Lego YouTube video and there's a good guy and a bad guy. And
yeah. It's there's
like,
a cop blocking somebody in a jail.
And it's like, there's just these ingrained things in our culture of like good and bad. It's very black and white. That's it. Yeah. And so I also feel for these police officers, the ones who I'm sure there are genuine people just trying to do a good job that are like, oh, this is, I've always wanted to be, help the person. I've always wanted to get bad guys, quote, bad guys, this like nebulous view of it. Mm-hmm. But then it morphs into, like you're saying, like a training tool or like a war tool where you become sort of like a militia instead of becoming somebody who is solving problems. And like when you're a child in kindergarten, you're literally solving problems all day long. So when you look at these heroes, like our son's looking at Paw Patrol and he's looking at like whatever the superheroes are saving the day, Super Wings, you're looking at them sit with these bad guys, quote unquote, who are just making mistakes or kind of selfish or this, and they're solving problems. But then all of that goes out the window. Like the compassion goes out the window. Mm-hmm. Once you become a man and you're masculine and you're some tough guy, you have to take away your compassion. So I basically feel for these little kids I'm seeing now that are like idolizing these police officers and these Paw Patrols and these like cops in this way, because I see them. I also see these policemen who probably at one point like were thinking good, bad, good and evil. And then you get wrapped up into this training situation and this society situation, which then takes away any sort of broad spectrum of the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, you would expect them to maybe behave themselves, but it turns out that being extremely powerful and totally unaccountable leads to a lot of...
it doesn't work.
A lot
of
scams. It doesn't
work in celebrities. It doesn't
work
in MLMs.
So weird. You would think that...
It doesn't work anywhere.
You'd think that it would work out and they would all be on their best behavior. But no.
No.
It turns out that shielding yourself from accountability from the public and having total run of the place and doing whatever you want actually leads to a lot of bad behavior.
Let's see.
And in the 70s, and you know, I mean, it's, I think it's true in a lot of places, but in New York in the 70s, especially, it was notorious. Like, cops were working with drug gangs. They were sticking up drug gangs. They would know, instead of breaking up a drug ring or whatever, they would just basically go in and say, like, give us your money and we'll go. I mean, there's so many stories of this, like sticking up kids, basically picking people's pockets on the streets, like roughing them up, throwing them up against a wall and saying, what do you got in your pocket? And
in the 20s,
and leaving. I mean, that was run of the mill stuff.
Business,
like, I mean, I guess the fact that they're not just like picking people's pockets in broad daylight in Brownsville or East New York for the most part is better in quotes, but I mean, it's not good. Anyway, so Ed Mullins now had a treasurer who was, let's say, less interested in scrutinizing the contents of his requests for reimbursement.
Was he making anything from these contents?
I don't know. Like, no one else was charged in this as of right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So he had three main ways of gaming this reimbursement system or this charging it to the union. So he would charge meals that he had that were not SBA related to the SBA credit card. And so that he got to have basically a free meal. So he wasn't getting any money off of that, but he was just getting free stuff off of their card. Or he'd give them stuff that he wanted to be reimbursed for and he would inflate the cost. For example, a $45.92 at a New Jersey wine bar was billed to SBA for $845.92. Wow. Or $609.89 at a steakhouse became $909.89. So that stuff happened over and over again. And some of it was, you know, a couple bucks, and some was...
It was all at a steakhouse.
A lot of money. It was all, actually, a lot of it was at a steakhouse. I mean, I don't want to, like, the stereotype of, like,
he's
a bunch
really
of old cops eating at a steakhouse, but that is what it was.
He's really doing himself.
Or he would just report random expenses and say, like, this was an SBA expense. So he'd be like, I went to the grocery store, and this was an SBA, this was a union expense.
I stocked up
expense.
The fridge. Everybody likes Fruitables.
So all in all, the Justice Department said he charged, quote, hundreds of high-end meals, clothing, jewelry, home appliances, and a relative's college tuition.
Whoa!
Yeah, that's the stuff he was getting for free. And the treasurer was just like, was not requiring receipts. He didn't submit receipts with a lot of these. Oh. He didn't submit any of the info that was needed.
I guess, if you're the treasurer.
This was the craziest part of this to me. And I actually turned to Katie last night as I was researching this. I said, do you want me to tell you something?
No.
Or do you want me to keep it fresh for the show?
I want you to keep it fresh.
And she said, keep it fresh for the show. This is wild.
Okay.
When they raided his house, they found in his office two copies of the of the credit card statements. One would say clean copy, and the other would say work copy. And he literally hand crossed the numbers out and would write the new or circle it and write the new number right next to it.
In his handwriting.
Yes, in his handwriting.
Didn't even do
He is a police officer. This is, that is nuts insane. To me. I could not believe
he
this.
He could have even whited it out and printed out
anything. No. They show photos of it. I mean, and we'll put it in the notes.
Yes.
In the Justice Department's indictment, there are pictures of him
nobody was gonna
writing
look at,
it.
He literally looks at evidence. That's what you do. You look at evidence all day.
He was making his own evidence. Now, here is the part where I will also say that I once worked for someone who is somewhat well known. I will not name any names because I don't want to have any old beef with anybody. But somebody who's kind of like a lifestyle
fancy schmancy guy,
fancy schmancy lady.
A lady. Oh, that one. Yeah.
Who is a lifestyle kind of influencer type.
I'm not a fan.
Who had me do something like this for her business. For and Urban which Outfitters. Is why I, for to charge her Urban Outfitters trips and her fancy lunches by herself to the business.
Which
is why I left. Anyway.
It's so funny. So people do it. Like people do it and believe that everybody just skims a little from the top. But if you're not a white person, it's a crime. If you're a white person, it's being clever. And then
Exploiting the loopholes in the system.
Right. And otherwise, it's being criminal.
So, so he had clean copy and work copy with literally like post-it notes on it.
Clean?
Yes, clean copy and work copy. In 2017, he submitted expenses for $69,655. In 2018, it was $265,465. Yeah. In 2019, it was $344,909. I mean, college is expensive. 2020, during the pandemic, the Justice Department was really surprised about this one. Still $174,114.
Because you got to get things delivered.
And in 2021, just through October, when they raided his house and he resigned as the president of the union, he had still rung up $153,836 until he was raided.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Justice Department said that it was over $1 million total between those years. The majority of which was fraudulently obtained. Now, what's also interesting, aside from the fact that he's this big blustery guy who thinks everybody is a criminal and says, you know, like the blacks and stuff like that, and like is talking, you know, all this kind of crazy stuff. There have been rumors about this for about a decade. ProPublica actually did an interesting story about how he had been accused of some of this stuff before. In 2011, people within either the union or the NYPD had told investigators that he misappropriated funds and was taking gifts in exchange for making certain decisions or doing favors for people or whatever.
Oh, so like taking
bribery, basically, yeah.
For police work.
Yeah, he was also accused of intervening in the case of a friend of his who had been pulled over for drunk driving.
Yeah,
trying to get the guy off the hook.
Yeah.
Then in 2014, someone challenged him for the presidency of this union, of the SBA. He was president from 2002 to 2021 when he resigned. He won, I think, four or five different times. Yeah, basically said the same thing, that he was misusing funds, that he was paying for stuff.
And then what happened?
They said that he had bought plane tickets to the Super Bowl with union money.
Yeah.
And that he had paid $18,000 to a neighbor of his who made up fake invoices for like services provided, you know, miscellaneous, whatever, who knows what it was.
$18,000?
Yeah, that it was $18,000.
How did it say why he didn't get elected?
Yeah, well, why he didn't get investigated?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's so people, for a lot of reasons, people do not like to investigate the police. Particularly, well, I think it's probably true in most places. But in New York City, the police unions are very, very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. And they will absolutely wreck politicians' careers. They will target people. They will make stuff life very, very difficult for people in what I would consider personally to be very unethical ways.
Yeah.
So there was the ProPublica story talks about this a little bit, and I don't I don't know all the details, but basically Ed Mullins led this lawsuit a while back to get all of these sergeants overtime pay from the city. They claimed that they had not been properly paid overtime.
Okay, that might happen. I don't know.
Yeah. And they won. Yeah. They won this case that was like, I think it was $20 million maybe in back overtime for like 4,000 or 5,000 different sergeants. During that case, there was the suspicion that some of the people that the union was calling to testify were lying.
Oh.
And people within the city were starting to investigate that. Mm-hmm. And the judge in the case said, stop investigating them because people do not feel like they can testify. This looks like an act of intimidation, mm-hmm. that you're investigating people as they're testifying in this case against the city.
Okay.
So back off. Mm-hmm. So that may have been on the back of people's minds. One thing that the ProPublica article points out is that the city comptrollers, who have the power to investigate financial improprieties within mm-hmm. lots of places, but including the NYPD, a lot of them, the past three or four comptrollers have wanted to be mayor. So there may be some element of, I don't want to get into this because of my mayoral aspirations. So I don't want to investigate the police. And just general investigating the police is a nightmare. So they make it impossible. They make people's lives very difficult. Even the civilian review board that we have here, you know, they're hostile to them. Don't turn over records, etc. They are absolutely fine not following, you know, the law and not delivering what's needed. So, because nobody's gonna really stand up to them. So, yeah, there's a lot of reasons why these things went uninvestigated. Okay. Then also in the story, they talk about how this part of the city said, oh, we turned it over here. And the other part said, we turned it over here. And the other part said, well, we didn't get that. And I don't recall that. And it was probably better suited to this place. So talk to that. You know, it was hot potatoing this kind of investigation all around.
So he was in this power for so long and he had people come up against him. Do you think those people were also intimidated by him? Like, did he use intimidation or bribery on those people that tried to go up against him?
I have no idea.
Oh, I didn't know if that was recorded.
No, I don't know. Okay. I mean, I think the union itself is intimidating in general.
But they had not... Also, everybody who was in the union really liked probably where he was taking it.
Well, I mean, he kept getting reelected.
Right.
I think generally speaking, like police... I can't speak for individual police, but
they liked him.
Organized police communication is getting more aggressive. They are not hiding their
support of each other.
The police unions in New York endorsed presidential candidate for the first time in I don't know how many decades, maybe ever in 2020, and it was Trump. And the unions were largely in favor of that. I mean, they...
You know, the military doesn't support him, though.
I don't know about that.
No, it is. I've talked to a lot of people that they've said that, like, the military is so against him because he's proven them over and over again that he, like, makes fun of them and he, like, screws with them. So military members...
I wonder if there are polls. There's got to be polls.
Yeah, well, I talked to somebody who was ex-military and he was like, oh, yeah, nobody trusts him.
Really?
And he, because he made fun of the military, fun of a disabled soldier, because he's gone back and forth. He said at first the military was all on his side. And then they showed over and over again that he would pull out and lose funds and not support them. So they saw his true colors and never turned back. So maybe New York City police do, but a lot of military and Navy don't support him.
Wow. Yeah. The latest a poll in August 2020. 49.9% had an unfavorable view of Trump, and 42% said they strongly disapprove of Trump's time in office. Biden was winning 41-37, and third party had 13%.
Yeah, that's they high. Really, well, because he showed, it, I think it's really interesting. I think
that's interesting.
At least with military and Navy.
Well, the police love Trump.
I know.
A lot.
But... Well, the New York City police too, but at least with military Navy, they were very black and white with him because they don't want to show somebody who's fake. Like he faked it out with them. Like he showed fraud. He showed his true colors and they called him right away on it and they saw what he was doing and in their groups, they don't support it. But I'll say he might not have done those actions or pulled out as quickly with police. You know, mm-hmm. he's used police as his like sounding board and he's used policing as a way to suppress certain people or ignite fear in certain places. So he hasn't turned his backs on them yet. But apparently he turned his back so quickly on the forces that they all understood real fast what was happening. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, there's also a different...
Because people lump them together.
This is not to get too Marxist on everybody, but there's also a class... difference. So traditionally in leftist uprisings, the military has been in play. Like it's possible that they take a leftist position or some portion of them, a large portion of them may take the leftist side of things. Mm-hmm. Not always, certainly, but that has happened because in the military, it is a catch-all for a lot of people who are poor and working class. Mm-hmm. And whereas the function of police is really a class position. Like, it is like we are going to be the divider line between racist property, capital's owners and the people who don't have. I mean, that's the structure of pretty much every law in the U.S. is in favor of people who already possess capital, who already possess property, and against and criminalizing the behaviors of everybody who doesn't and punishing them as much as possible, essentially.
This is so depressing.
So the police have never really, there are very, very few examples that I'm aware of the police taking a leftist side of things. They're consistently in favor of, they're consistently in favor of, because they are a protected class in a lot of ways. Like they are not, they're excluded from essentially having the law enforced on them.
Yeah.
And that is an exchange made by the government, the state, to say, look, we will protect you from all of our punishments if you protect us from people.
Yeah.
Trying to reimagine society in any other way. That's why they've always been strike breakers and slave catchers. I mean, that's the whole, a huge part of their history. So I would say that just, you know, and the police unions have really become the mouthpiece for a very aggressive version of like, we're not only are we not changing, but we're going to actively scare you about what life would be like if police have to change even a little bit, that they're not afraid to.
I just feel that they are the loudest mouthpieces because.
Yeah. And this guy was, Ed Mullins was one of the loudest of loud.
And it's like, you can have, I feel like, again, like people just like genuinely trying to think that they're doing the right thing. But then there's all kinds of people in every single community. You know, there's like, even in idealistic places, you're like, well, that guy kind of sucks. Like there's all kinds of people, but the amount of control and the large mouthpiece and the large influence that they had in this situation, it just takes over. And so that's, they decide they want it to be this way. They want to influence things in this way. And that's where we're going to go.
Yeah. And I think I should also say that like, we kind of touched on it a little earlier. I don't know if it'll get left in, but I don't care like whether police are nice people. Like maybe they are, but that's sort of irrelevant to me. And I find that to be like a deflection that people use to go like, but there are nice cops. It's like, okay, I'm not talking about whether they're nice or not. Like as a journalist, I work with everybody that I work with in my reporting basically has been incarcerated or is currently incarcerated. And like people think that like, you know, police brutality or things like that are this like, weird anomaly that happens sometimes. Like, it's not. It isn't. Every single person that I've ever met, you know, and these are people who are like, I'm 60 now. I did 30 years in prison. I'm a Buddhist. I only want to keep people out of trouble. You know, all I do is meditate and teach art to inner city kids, and the police are fucked up. Like they're not grinding some axe. No, I didn't think so. I'm just saying for like, cause people, I don't know, people hear stuff about the police and they're like, you're just like, whatever. That's like, it's good. Or like, there's nice people. Like, I'm sure there are nice people. I don't want to say that, like, I'm not here to say that all police as individual people are bad. And I don't think that's what anybody should be concerned about anyway. Like this system lets,
it would help this guy.
Yeah. This system let, he's a huge example, but it is a system that lets people who are in law enforcement skirt accountability for even little stuff. But I mean, big stuff for sure too. I mean, that's how it's designed. And I just think he's like a great example. Like he's a guy who's online on their Twitter account, you know, talking about welfare queens and stuff. And he's the whole time he's allegedly, you know, gaming the system for almost $1 million of his own unions. But he's not scamming. Well, he's not sticking up people on the street. He's sticking up other officers. Like that's wild.
That's also it's like these cult leaders, these concepts that they are so full of themselves. They believe this is owed to them.
Yeah.
They believe whatever their salary is, isn't enough. So they have to find it in another way. So they deserve this. And the fact that they've reasoned that however they've put their life on the line, maybe they've had near death experiences, maybe they've saved friends, maybe they pulled people from
He could have
buildings.
Seen some really messed up side. I have no idea what kind of psychological
but in that moment with that life experience, he goes, this is my payment. So he's taking it into his own hands, and so he'll firmly believe that this is what's deserved to him. And what's so fascinating is that you have someone who's in this power who's decreeing good and bad to other people. And so I'm sure he's never thought another person in their shoes, somebody that he's arrested, has believed that this is what they deserved. And it because the same thing of taking something that's not yours, you have to reason in your mind, there's a reason to take it. So
that is also like, that's a thing, especially in the US. I mean, I don't know if it's true in other places, but especially in the US, it's like when there's white collar crime,
yeah,
it's like, oh, that's good business. Like, yeah. You're just, that's a loophole.
It's deserved.
Or that's like, oh, cut them some slack.
Or
like,
everybody else is doing
oh,
it.
That's, a, you know, yeah. $1 million over whatever. Like, yeah, like that's how they do it. Or that's how this, but like pick, you know, stick somebody up for $20 on the street. And you're
cigarettes.
An animal that yeah. needs to be in a cell for 10 years. It's, yeah, or God forbid you don't swipe your Metro card. You need 6 cops to come over and hassle exactly. you. It's like, there's always been that excuse of, well, it's different when people look like me. It's different when they're white. It's different when they're rich than when they're poor or black or yeah. Latino or
But the justification
whatever.
That he has that he deserves this, he's also going to think that he is unique in this way. It's only he that has this situation. It's only he that figured it out, that he's so much smarter than everyone else. It's like the number one thing with scammers is that they think, how come nobody else did this?
Also,
I'm so much smarter.
I think it's the vision of him thinking, oh man, I'm so smart, as he scratches out on his credit card statement. And he's like, oh, clean copy and work copy. No one's ever going to be able to crack this
real
code. Oh,
they're not.
No one's ever going to be able to figure this one out with my knee. yeah, I mean, that is the funniest thing in the world to me. Like, oh, they'll never figure this code out. Oh, one has a blue post-it and the other has a yellow post-it. And I wrote work copy and clean copy on one. They'll never be able to crack this nut.
This one has a highlighter on it.
Yeah, that's just, to me, is like the funniest thing.
It's
like, I hope, assuming he did this, I hope that
I'm sure
he was sitting there
proud.
I am so smart.
They're so proud.
I would be so scared to get caught. I would never just keep post-it notes. That's wild.
But then, so here's the other thing too.
I would be losing my mind. I wouldn't be able to do anything else. I wouldn't even be able to enjoy these dinners. I would be sitting there sweating like, this is $2 worth of stolen steak on my fork.
Destiny. You don't believe that this is your...
Yeah.
You don't believe that this is your God-given right
I'm entitled to this.
Yes, and that is the thing. It's an entitlement. And then if there ever...
I don't believe I'm entitled to pretty much anything.
Genuinely, like, we are
If anything, I am the opposite.
Here. Humans should not be. Dinosaurs lived for so long. Not to get back to preschool logic, but like, we're a blip in life. Like, we're nothing. Like, we don't deserve anything. We're lucky that we're here. We're lucky we're alive, that we're breathing. In a second, we're going to get wiped out by a volcano. It's fine. Just be lucky you're alive. But what I'm saying... But what the other thing too with these
we watch
Connors,
a lot of Magic School Bus.
We do. The thing that is crazy is that, like, then when you build up this situation, when you build up this behavior, this style, this lifestyle of like over $1 million, you got to keep it up, because then you believe you're also a vehicle for showing everyone how great life could be.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes then they think they're like these messiahs who are representing how you should live your life and why you should love the police department and showing how great. Like, then they take this, all cult leaders do, and I'm not saying he's a cult leader, but a lot of our cult leaders who are in charge of other people who are scamming or the head of an MLM or a pyramid scheme, they believe then that they are sharing through their exorbitant wealth the message and the way to live and why it's legitimate. Because you get positive reinforcement if you come up and you're showing up with a Mercedes and you have all this shit and you're feeling so fancy and your wife is decked out in jewelry. Everyone likes you and respects you. You're getting this positive reinforcement, so you want to keep it going. There's no reason, if this person believes that he is unaffected by checks and balances, that he can write sticky notes of like, lie to government, don't lie to government. he's not gonna,
oh my God, I wish it had said that.
He's not going to guess himself ever. He's never going to second guess himself.
That's amazing. Well, right now, he's awaiting trial. And
in his beautiful home.
And he gets to just hang out in his lovely Long Island home and everything's fine. And he's facing a maximum sentence is 20 years. There's no
in
way
a
he's...
Prison?
Yeah.
Or just is
no, in a prison.
Whoa, that's going
But he's
suck.
Not going to get that for
but
sure. If he gets any
really
time,
bad.
It'll be like 3 or what? No, they'll send him to like white collar. Or
they'll put him in
tennis prison. prison. He might be in isolated, quote unquote, isolated confinement because you cannot so have a dangerous. Cop running around a prison.
No, I mean, he will get killed. He will get very, very injured and hurt.
So, yeah, I don't know what that'll look like. But yeah, it's, we don't have a verdict yet. So all of this is alleged for now, although. The FBI so finding these sticky notes on things like Damn literally it. Crossed out.
His YouTube video of how to scam the government really isn't working for him.
Yeah. His if I points. Did it by yeah. Ed Mullins. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's yeah. So it doesn't. I don't know how they're going to argue. I don't know what the defense argument will be. But as somebody who reports a lot on the legal system, he's entitled to a defense. He's entitled to a vigorous defense, and it's on the government to prove all of this that he did it. Well, and if they can't do it, then he deserves to walk free. I know it's like very tough for people to digest sometimes, but I will say that having talked to people who have been in a lot of prison, people who've been in prison, it's a vigorous defense, and the possibility of people beating their charges is very, very, very essential to the system. Even though the idea of this guy walking free or people who did bad stuff walking free, that is,
I'm just actually happy.
Yeah, it's important.
It is. And I'm just happy it's exposed. I think that's the number one thing. I think that maybe it's just that I'm settling in the world that I don't think everyone is going to get, every bad guy is going to get in trouble. I don't think everything's crime is going to get solved. I don't think everything's going to be justified. It really doesn't feel justified right now, the system that we're in.
No.
So I don't actually expect that to be justified, but I'm just happy that it's out there. And I'm happy for the validation of people that felt that this was shady, that people were in his network, that other cops that were like, this is not right, or this is crazy, or he's manipulating me, or he's lying to me. Like, I'm just happy that it's gotten out into the public.
And they
deserve that.
The SBA is also suing him for all of the money that he took. $1 million plus other damages.
Because he has to pay, my God, that's from pension plans, that's from fees, that's from taxes. I mean, I don't know how that'll ever get back to anyone, but because that's beyond me. But like, I think also, I guess it's cynical of me that I don't expect that much punishment on his part, as he clearly doesn't. But I'm glad that this is brought out there so that people know about it. And also somebody who this whole time would be like, the system is flawed, they can also feel justified. Even just a regular citizen who's like, I've seen this done. I know what happens. No one's listening to me. Mm-hmm. They all act like they're the good guys and I'm some kind of like loser because I did something once when I was 15.
Yeah.
That it should be out there. Everything should be brought to light.
Oh, everyone should know that cops commit all kinds of crimes. I mean, that's like, people should know that, and that when they are on their high horse about being the dividing line between civilization and chaos, that they are 100% out there committing crimes. They have really high rates of domestic violence. They have really high rates of lots of stuff. Instead of sticking up dice games like they did in the 70s, now this is what they're doing, more white collar stuff. They don't have to stick up dice games, although they might. I don't know.
I don't want to think about it. It's very, very upsetting, and it gets me really sad because there's a lot of bad out there, and I just get very, very depressed. But I'll say that, like, I think that I'm a big fan of the FBI, actually. Like, you can feel however you want to feel. The FBI, they watch Jen Shah. They're watching the cops.
They're watching reality TV.
They are.
The FBI, they're just like us.
They are. They're looking at the Shaw Shockers. Like, I'm really into I know I got to wrap this up. I'm really into the FBI doing their homework. And I support them. And we did have one friend who knew an FBI guy. And he wouldn't tell us anything.
And
Alan, he was dying. He was like, please give me a wink.
But just tell me generally what you do.
He wouldn't say a single word. And because he knew Alan would get on this podcast and tell everybody.
No, this was before this podcast existed.
But like, we're big fans here of the FBI. I'm sure they do their own, bad stuff. And I'm sure historically they've done their own bad stuff. But currently right now, it does seem that they are trying everyone's
They did kill Fred Hampton.
Who's Fred Hampton again?
The black socialist leader from Chicago.
Fuck, that's right. That's horrible too. You're getting me so depressed. I'm trying to think of like a positive.
And they sent letters to Martin Luther King to say he should kill himself.
Yeah, okay. Everybody, the world sucks. I'm going to go kill myself.
No.
I'm just saying right now, I like that I'm seeing it's a little bit more impartial than maybe historically it had been.
There are lots, I will say, that having reported on a lot of this stuff, let me say that there are, well, I'll leave you on the happy note, because a lot of my reporting actually involves alternatives to these things and like what works and does other stuff work. And I will say that there are tons of robust, interesting, effective systems that are small. They don't get a lot of attention. They don't get a lot of money, but that are helping people change their lives in prison before, you know, instead of punishment, that are helping people change their lives before they get to prison without punishment, that are alternatives to policing. These things exist. They're small. I have no idea if abolition or whatever is possible, but there are these examples, and there are a lot of organizations that are doing interesting stuff. You can look up 1 Million Experiments is a great one. Oh, you can look up also Interrupting Criminalization. There are lots of like small on the ground organizations all over the country that are trying to keep people out of the prison system, the jail system, that are trying to keep people from police interactions, that are trying to genuinely bring meaningful reforms to different police departments that have been, some of them have been pretty effective. I don't know if it solves all the problems of policing, probably not, but it can help reduce violence and things like that. These things exist. And so they're worth looking into, looking up, giving them your support if you're interested. They need volunteers. They need people who can do their social media, that can make art for them, that can help organize events. They can do, they need that kind of stuff. And they're small. And when they get written about by journalists, they're really excited. And actually, it's a great joy. And it's changed my attitude about this system and law, you know, the criminal legal system, because I've been able to see the organizations and meet the people who are doing work that's outside the punishment paradigm and are changing people's lives without throwing them into cells or arresting them, giving them the resources that they need to succeed and helping them do that without violence and more harm. So these things are out there. So yeah, the police do a lot of troubling things, but there's also a ton of people out there working and having success. It's just small and it's here and there. And they need attention. So
yeah,
that might be a good spot to a happy, bright spot to end on. Maybe not happy, but there's possibility for other things.
They're
real. It's not like theoretical. Yeah. Put your energy in those places. They're not just ideas. They're people actually doing this work. So it's real. It exists. It's tangible. It's making impact. And instead of just complaining about the police all day, which we can do, it needs to happen, but we can also get involved in doing stuff and learning about how those organizations work and what other approaches work.
Yes.
They're out there.
Oh, this is heavy.
I know, it can be.
It gets me really sad. It just gets me really sad. And I think that this year has felt, I think COVID has just felt like very overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because there's a feeling of like when shit is going down, we can at least get out there. We can get out of our apartments. Mm-hmm. We can move a muscle. We can feel like we're making change. Even if it was distracting and not necessarily the best. Like I'm happy that things have happened. I'm happy that awareness skyrocketed in 2020 of things that were happening in people's lives that finally the rest of the world noticed, and not just small groups of people that were being treated that way. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's just feels in a very tight place right now. It just feels very hard. And thank you for bringing this tonight, Jen.
Yeah.
And I really want to know about this guy's wife. I wonder, like, did she get her Botox? Did she get injections? Like, was the jewelry hers?
I'm not even sure he's married. I have no idea. Seems like he would be, though, right?
I feel like he would be. Because, like, that much money, like
60-something-year-old cop, Long Island, feels like it.
He's going to settle down.
Well, I don't know.
Well, yeah, if he has kids. I want to know, like, if any females benefited from this and how they
look. If you're Ed Mullen's wife, will you call in to Scam Wow, please?
How does your hair look?
Please call in.
Oh, yes. So guys, anyway, we love you. Thank you so much, Alan, for doing this episode.
Thank you for having me.
Sweet. Thank you to our apartment for housing us. Thank you to our future sponsors of the bikes, exercise bike sponsors, wherever you are. Yeah. I need you.
Thank you for...
To our listeners, and Kate and Jesse for editing. And guys, if you have anything on this, if you have an opinion, a point of view, if you've been scammed or not been scammed, if you need a friend, you can call us on our Hot Tip hotline, because you know I love a phone call. 347-509-9414. We're also on scamwowpodcast@gmail.com, at scamwowpodcast on Instagram, Twitter, I believe on Facebook. And we're here for you guys. And we love you. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
ScamWow Podcast Season 2 is produced and edited by me, Caitlin Brodnick, produced and edited by Caitlin Moldenhauer, and edited by Jesse Caron. We are part of the More Banana Podcast Network, which is an all-female owned and run network for women's voices uninterrupted. If you love us, the best thing you can do is rate and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It will help us tremendously. Thank you guys so much for listening, all of your support. We're so happy to have you here, and we will see you next week. Bye!
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you, and let's make season two even more memorable together.